Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 171st edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making the news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Mike Murphy. Most notably, I'm not Dennis Hart. And I just want to take a moment and thank Dennis Hart, who helped get this program going with Laura Bellin several years ago now at this point. This is the 171st program. And so just want to thank Dennis for his professionalism, his guidance, his mentorship, and the example he has set for all of us. And will continue to set for us in a more limited role at KHOI. And I just want to welcome the founding host, Laura Bellin. And Laura, congratulations for keeping Capital Week going and also what you accomplished with Dennis over these years. It's amazing.
Thanks so much, Mike. And I'm going to try to put all those lessons I learned from Dennis into action.
Well, yeah, that's very good. And so we're trying to find what direction Capital Week will be taking as we are here in the first week in the wake of Dennis's absence. And so we're going to be trying out different things. But this week, we'll be talking about environmental groups asking the EPA to step in to protect Iowans' drinking water, as well as the state of play in Iowa's congressional campaigns. But first, we're going to recap some Iowa legislative business and flag a few more notable bills that did not reach Governor Kim Reynolds' desk.
Yeah, we're going to start with a lot of legislative news that we didn't have time to cover last week. Dennis and I used to joke that we just never had a slow week all year when the legislature was in session. And last week was a little bit slower, so we're going to circle back, cover some things that we couldn't get to in last week's show. And I want to start with the budget, because the bills setting the state's $8.9 billion budget for the coming fiscal year that begins on July 1st also included some policy language that's not directly related to spending.
Laura, let me ask you really quick. Is that normal, a normal way to set policy, or is that...
Usually policy bills go through a different process. They go through the committee process, and that's why the legislature has funnel deadlines. But it is common for the legislature to put policy language in spending bills at the last minute. And that's one reason that I pay a little bit less attention to the funnel deadlines than I used to, because as we've seen in the past and we saw again this year, we see the revival of some of these ideas that supposedly were dead in March. We see them revived in the budget. So sure. I'm going to start with the education appropriations bill, which included some language limiting diversity, equity, inclusion programming at Iowa's three state universities. That, of course, would include ISU, which many of KHOI's listeners have some kind of connection to. And this codifies what the Iowa Board of Regents is already doing. The Board of Regents, on a recommendation from the legislature last year, did a study and implemented a policy in November to only have DEI programming that was required to maintain the university's accreditation or required by federal or state law. And now the legislature has put that in Iowa code, assuming Governor Kim Reynolds signs that. And so that is going to limit a lot of the programming that exists. And I think ISU's president, Wendy Winterstein, said last week that ISU is planning to close its main DEI office that it has on campus.
Oh, yep.
Another provision in that bill requires, it has a new language about what K through 12 school districts have to do about chronic absenteeism. That has been a problem, particularly in some larger school districts. And it was an issue before the pandemic and has been more of an issue since the pandemic. And the Democrats were very critical of this language, but there was a House bill that passed that the Senate didn't take up that would require every county to do a process that's similar to what's now happening in Buena Vista County, where when the students are absent for more than 10% of the school days, schools would have to notify parents and guardians and also notify the county attorney. And then if the student is missing more than 15% of class of school days, there would be some kind of an engagement meeting with parents. And if the family is not a participant, is not sticking to this absenteeism prevention plan, then the county attorneys might get involved. And so when this was debated in the legislature, some of the Democrats said that they're worried that, first of all, this is very prescriptive for all 99 counties. It might not work well in counties where the county attorney has much more of a caseload. But also, they were very concerned that some parents, if they get a warning like that from the school district, they may just respond by pulling their kids out of school completely and purporting to homeschool them rather than trying to deal with the issue of absenteeism.
Oh, yeah. So, is absenteeism a big issue? I mean, is
I think it's a bigger issue in some. There's a perception that it's a bigger issue in some school districts than others, like the Des Moines Public Schools and the Waterloo Community Schools. I mean, I think it's an issue that all schools are dealing with. This idea came out of Buena Vista County because it's based on something that the Storm Lake School District has done in cooperation with the Buena Vista County Attorney. But in any case, it remains to be seen. And again, Governor Reynolds has not signed this bill. It's possible that she could item veto some language, but it's unlikely, I think, that she would item veto this language.
Is there any difference between how like a 15-year-old truant is treated compared to a 10-year-old or?
I don't remember in the language that they put in the budget exactly how that would work. I think that it was more related to the number of days of school that they're missing. I think in Iowa code, though, there is something in the truancy language. I think there is something where it treats teenagers differently, but I'm just not sure about that.
Okay.
Moving to the judicial branch budget, this was something where the House Republicans really fought hard to get more money for the judicial branch than what Governor Reynolds had proposed in her budget and what the Iowa Senate Republicans, they basically followed the governor's lead for their budget. So Chief Justice Susan Christensen had said in her annual address to the legislature, she had really highlighted a couple of issues, and one of them was judges' pay. Iowa ranks very low in terms of judicial pay, significantly lower than the states surrounding us. And also an issue with the judicial pension system, which is a little bit complicated, but it has had the result of even further lowering judges' take-home pay. So the House Republicans wanted a 6% raise for judges. The Senate Republicans had proposed a 2% raise for judges, and the final bill includes a 5% raise. And it does also include some changes to judicial pensions, although not everything that the judicial branch had asked for. A couple of things that are missing from the judicial branch budget: the House had passed a bill to increase pay for jurors who now get $30 a day. That would have increased to $75. And for longer trials, there would have been an even higher pay increase. That did not make it into this budget bill, and I expect the House Republicans to come back next year to try to do that again. Another thing that's very important is that Senate Republicans, led by State Senator Julian Garrett, have tried for several years in a row to include policy language that would give the governor more control over the district judicial nominating commissions that send her candidates for open judgeships. And the House Republicans have said in the past that that's a non-starter in their caucus, and that, in fact, did not make it into the final bill.
So is that, I mean, do other governors have that kind of control, let's say?
Well, the judicial selection is really different in different states. So Wisconsin, for instance, still has judicial elections,
Yeah.
which hasn't elected judges since the early 1960s. So this is a system that in 2019, the Republican trifecta changed the state judicial nominating commission. They removed the Supreme Court justice who served on that and gave the governor one extra appointment. And that is what they now want to carry on to the lower district nominating commission so that the judge, currently the senior judge in every judicial district, serves on those commissions. And this would change it so that the governor has an extra appointee. But that's something House Republicans so far just don't want to go there.
Understood.
So moving to the justice system's budget, this is other aspects that are not directly the court system, but are somewhat related to crime and courts. So there was an increase in pay for corrections workers. There have been some issues in the Department of Corrections hiring staff, for incarcerations, for facilities, jails, and prisons. Minimum starting pay is going to be $24 an hour under this bill. There was a small increase of $3 to the rate, the indigent defense rate for contract attorneys. That was to address a shortage of attorneys around the state who are willing to do criminal defense work for people who can't afford to pay for their own attorney. The Republicans rejected Democratic amendments to try to increase victim assistance funding, which may be looking at a pretty significant federal funding cut later this year. But State Representative Brian Losey, who is the chief judicial branch appropriator in the House, he indicated that the legislature may provide emergency funding for that next year if, in fact, the federal government really limits the victim assistance funding that Iowa now gets.
So the federal assistance that Iowa now gets, that's, it doesn't have to be a federal crime, that it could be.
No, it's just for, these are for victim assistance programs that all over the state. It's not only for federal crimes.
That's okay.
The point you raise, but it does, money does come from the Federal Victims of Crime Act, and it, money from that program goes to state victim assistance programs all over the country.
Okay.
Moving to the standings budget bill, this is usually the last bill that is passed. There were some more cuts to area education agency budgets. Democrats strongly objected to this, but they did not have the votes to stop it. This is going to be an issue for the AEAs because already at least 350 staff of AEAs have either resigned their post this year or indicated that they're not going to continue after their contracts expire in June. And it's not clear whether the AEAs are going to be able to hire to replace many of those people. So that is one issue. The standings bill also included $14 million in funding to support paraeducators. Those are the teaching, the assistants, the people who work with primarily kids who have special needs. And that was part of the negotiated deal to get the AEA bill through the House. That was something House Republicans really wanted, to be able to increase pay for these paraeducators so there would be less turnover and more consistency in those roles for the kids who do need special education. Finally, there was a provision that appeared at the last minute, I mean, literally like after midnight on the very last night of session, giving the Iowa Department of Public Safety $2 million for a new task force that is apparently going to look at the rise in illegal immigration and related criminal conduct. And there really wasn't any more detail than that in the standings bill. There had been some talk around the legislature that there may be language in the standings bill that would reduce the number of Division of Criminal Investigation personnel who need to be in casinos, but that did not make it into the final bill.
So about this rise in illegal immigration and related criminal conduct task force, so is that to study this, or do they have...
It sounded like it's just money that so they can staff a task force. I don't really know what it's going to be doing. It wasn't prescriptive about how they have to spend that $2 million.
Wow.
There was another bill that revived at the last minute in the Senate. It was a version of a House bill that would have prescribed a new social studies curriculum. The bill the House approved in March was very, very detailed about topics that would have to be taught in grades 5 through 12. The final bill in the Senate was somewhat less prescriptive, but it still borrows from a nonprofit, curriculum ideas that come from a conservative nonprofit. The curriculum would require more study of Western civilization, more study of certain topics, including the free Greek city-states, the Roman Republic, the Roman Empire, medieval Europe, Columbus and the Age of Discovery, World Wars I and II, the Holocaust and the Cold War. And then there would be certain documents that would be mandatory in the curriculum. Several Democrats objected during the debate that this is going to be difficult for schools to implement. Also, it is very skewed toward white European topics rather than multicultural topics. And some Democrats said that they just felt generally that teachers should have more leeway, school districts should have more leeway on setting curriculum, and that's not normally something that is prescribed in the state code.
Wow. Yeah, Gandhi was once asked what he thought about Western civilization, and he thought it would be a good idea and someone should try it.
Well, that was mentioned. There was an amendment, Senator Herman Kornbach of Ames offered an amendment when the Senate was debating this bill to change references of to Western civilization, to change that to world civilization, and that was rejected.
Interesting.
On a party line vote.
So it's 15 minutes after the hour here on KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. And if you're listening to us live and you are tuned in to Capital Week, your front row seat for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Mike Murphy here with Laura Bellin. And a reminder, this program is also available as a podcast. Just search for KHOI's Capital Week on your favorite platform, be it Apple or Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify. And there we are. Again, it's KHOI's Capital Week. Where are we going from here, Laura?
I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the bills that didn't pass this year that because we may see some of these again next year when the legislature comes back. And although the House and Senate are both Republican controlled, they have very different legislative priorities. And there were really quite a few bills that of each other's where the other chamber killed a bill that had unanimous Republican support in one. So I just want to mention those really briefly so we have time to get to some other topics. The Senate, in general, as a general philosophy, the Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer said in the middle of the session that they don't feel that Iowa needs to pass very many bills. So they didn't pass as many laws, or they weren't trying to enact as many laws as the House Republicans. But there were several things that they supported that didn't get taken up by the House. One was a bill that was seen as another attempt to undermine State Auditor Rob Sand, who is the only Democratic statewide elected official remaining in Iowa. This would allow state agencies to be audited by outside CPAs if they didn't want to use the state auditor's office. And so that would, first of all, affect the state auditor's ability to look at what's going on in those agencies. It would also affect their funding because a lot of the funding of the state auditor's office is through fees paid for those routine annual audits. Again, the Senate approved that. The House did not take it up. The Senate also had a bill limiting defense subpoenas. This was something that the Attorney General's office proposed. The Senate made some changes to it, but it would really limit what criminal defendants could do in terms of requesting evidence, trying to get information. And the House Republicans, there were a lot of issues with that. I think that bill got a little bit tripped up in the scandal going on with the DCI and the sports betting and the warrantless surveillance that informed some of those prosecutions. Finally, the Senate, again, they've passed several bills like this in the past. They had another bill limiting the Iowa Department of Natural Resources acquisition of land. This one would have said the DNR can't purchase new public land at auction. Again, House Republicans did not take that up.
Interesting. Laura, you mentioned Rob Sand. I just wanted to mention really quickly, we did just receive a press release that he'll be holding a press conference, releasing a report tomorrow that shows Iowans will benefit from removing the four-year college degree requirements from dozens of public sector jobs. So he'll be giving a press conference about that tomorrow morning. Do you know anything about that?
Yep. Yep, I'm hoping to be there. I'm planning, it's on my calendar for tomorrow morning. So yes, and that's something that, I mean, there's a workforce shortage generally, and it does affect the public sector in Iowa as well as the private sector. So I think that that's probably where he's coming at with this proposal. So I wanted to flag very quickly some of the bills that the House approved this year that the Senate didn't take up, that we didn't have time to talk about on last week's show. There were some controversial election law changes that would, again, limit the time Iowans have to return absentee ballots, would have banned drop boxes, would have required other changes for mailed ballots. And I expect that that will probably return next year in one form or another. The House had approved a bill, a fetal homicide bill with personhood language talking about unborn children. The Senate did not take that up because of concerns of how it might affect in vitro fertilization availability, as we saw earlier this year in Alabama. The House wanted to allow Iowans to buy Gadsden flag license plates. That's the don't tread on me flag. And some of the proceeds for those specialty plates would have gone to the Iowa Firearms Coalition, which is the NRA's affiliate in Iowa. That was another one the Senate didn't take up. There were a couple of tax bills the House passed with very broad bipartisan support, reviving the film tax credit, which many other states have, that expanding the adoption tax credit. I believe that was a unanimous vote in the House, wasn't taken up by the Senate. Tuition caps for state universities. And on the very last night, a casino moratorium that would have extended the current casino moratorium, which is going to expire this summer, would have extended that until 2029. I don't know exactly why they waited until literally late night of the last night of the session to pass that in the House, but it didn't go anywhere in the Senate before they adjourned.
So, meaning no more casinos can be built until we revisit this again in 20.
That's what it would have said. So the Racing and Gaming Commission, in theory, has the ability to approve licenses for new casinos. And Cedar Rapids, in particular, has been wanting to get a new casino for a long time, has been rejected a couple of times by the Racing and Gaming Commission. And a couple of years ago, the legislature passed a 2-year moratorium, basically taking that decision out of the hands of the commission. And there was an attempt in the House to extend that for another 5 years, but it didn't go on. One more thing I just wanted to mention in this area. This was a bill that didn't get taken up on the floor of either the House or the Senate. It's a complicated issue related to electric transmission lines, but the main thing is this is the bill that the policy that the Iowa Supreme Court blocked in 2023 in a ruling that came down in the middle of the legislative session that just enraged Republican legislators who felt that the court was overstepping their bounds by saying that this provision passed unconstitutionally when it passed as part of a budget bill in 2020. And we had talked about it on the show last year. And I said I anticipated an effort to pass this as a standalone bill this year. And in fact, it did get through the Commerce Committee in both the House and the Senate, but for some reason, it was not taken up on the floor. So for now, at least, the legislators are acquiescing in that idea that the Iowa Supreme Court blocked that policy on electric transmission lines and it's not coming back.
Okay, we're whipping through. We've got about 8 minutes left in the program. So
Okay.
where should we go from here? Do we, I
Yeah,
mean,
let's move to some non-legislative news.
okay, good plan.
So last week, Congress gave final approval finally to a foreign aid package. It includes a total of $95 billion, about two-thirds of that going to Ukraine, about $26 million going to Israel, and then the rest going to Taiwan and other projects, areas in the Indo-Pacific. All of the Iowans in the U.S. House had supported that bill, as well as Senators Grassley and Ernst also voted for it. And that was something that President Biden signed into law almost immediately as soon as it reached his desk last week. Also, Representative Ashley Hinson spoke publicly last week for the first time about that trip to Ukraine. We had talked about this a few weeks ago. I thought it was a little bit odd that Representative Hinson and Senator Ernst were on a foreign delegation, bipartisan delegation to Ukraine and Poland, and then they came back and didn't talk about it at all. But Ashley Hinson said in speaking to reporters in Cedar Rapids last week that going to Ukraine, meeting with President Zelensky, meeting with other people on the ground there, really reinforced for her that it is important. It was important to approve another foreign aid package.
Interesting. And so you were talking about environmental groups petitioning the EPA about.
That's right. 13 environmental groups in April petitioned the EPA to take action to protect drinking water in Northeast Iowa. They filed this petition after the State Environmental Protection Commission adopted rules that did not protect. This is particularly related to counties in Northeast Iowa that have what's called karst topography. And karst is it, they, it's much easier for things to seep into the groundwater in this karst topography that is in what's often called the Driftless Region in Northeast Iowa. So the petition really focuses on that because waters in that part of the state are particularly vulnerable to nitrate pollution. And they're taking the lead of environmental groups did the same thing in Minnesota because part of this Driftless Region extends into southeast Minnesota. And the EPA did take some action there to try to protect the drinking water. So we're going to see what happens. The DNR has not commented on this petition, but they're saying the federal government needs to step in because Iowa regulators just are not doing enough to regulate pollution from these large animal confinements that, and they're not doing enough to address the fact that drinking water and wells have high nitrate levels that are too high for human health.
Okay, and as we have a little under 5 minutes left, maybe while we're on the subject of the EPA, should we talk about the E15 and summertime?
Yes, just very briefly, the US EPA did agree to expand sales of E15. Those are the higher ethanol blends in the summer. Generally, E15 has not been allowed to be sold during the summer months because of concerns that it can increase smog. But the Biden administration now, 3 years in a row, is allowing this. Most Iowa politicians would prefer for the federal government to allow E15 sales permanently year-round. Maybe we
Yes.
can skip down now to
Sure.
the
You want to go to the congressional races?
Yeah, let's go to congressional races. We haven't talked that much about campaign news since the Iowa caucuses. So there was a deadline on February or on April 15th, rather, to report fundraising from the first quarter of the year. And Randy Feenstra, who represents the 4th district, that includes most of KHOI's listening area, he is spending very heavily. He has a primary rival, Kevin Virgil, who's not that well known. But Randy Feenstra raised a little over $800,000 in the first quarter, and he spent almost all of it. He spent about $775,000, including more than $200,000 on direct mail, more than $200,000 on other media buys, more than $40,000 on polling. And his campaign team, they claim that their polling shows that he's about 50 points ahead of Kevin Virgil, but they're taking nothing for granted. They're running phone banks. They're doing, as I mentioned, a lot of they'll be doing a lot of heavy paid advertising, both in the Des Moines market as well as in the Sioux City market, which reaches most of the counties in that 4th district.
Okay, and
I'm going to go in reverse order. The
okay.
third the third district is widely considered the most competitive. This is one where in Biden and Trump basically tied very close to a tie in the counties across the counties that are now part of the third congressional district. The Republicans, the National Republican Congressional Committee, had an event in the Des Moines area on Saturday morning, opening what they called a battle station, basically a campaign headquarters for Zach Nunn, who is a first termer. Usually incumbents are most vulnerable in that first reelection campaign. Zach Nunn defeated Cindy Axne by only about 2,000 votes. And so this race is going to be pretty close. So far, there's a two-way Democratic primary. Lanon Bacomb has a fundraising lead over Melissa Vine. And Lanon Bacomb has also actually outraised Zach Nunn, although Zach Nunn has more cash on hand. But this is one that both parties should be investing heavily in. Moving to the second district, that one, Ashley Hinson is the incumbent now, second term incumbent. She's got a big fundraising advantage over Sarah Corkery. The National Democrats don't seem to be targeting this race at all. And most of the forecasters are calling that either a likely Republican or a safe Republican race. I wanted to quickly talk about the first district where the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, was in Iowa City over the weekend, headlining an event for Marionette Miller Meeks. You may remember Marionette Miller Meeks famously won the closest U.S. House race in the country in 2020, winning by 6 votes over Rita Hart. She then defeated Christina Bohannon by about 6% of the vote in 2022. And Christina Bohannon is running again and has outraised Marionette Miller Meeks now for 3 quarters in a row, and is actually very close, even in cash on hand, to Marionette Miller Meeks. So I think that although this is considered either a lean Republican or a likely Republican district, depending on who you talk to, this is one, the first district in Iowa that covers most of the southeastern counties. Democrats are talking about targeting it. Christina Bohannon has raised more than $2 million so far. As I mentioned, in terms of cash on hand, she's very close to Marionette Miller Meeks' total, and I expect this one to be a very hard-fought race as well.
Okay, well, Laura, we did get a lot in, but not everything. Let me just tell our listeners you've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. We'll be back here next week at the same time to talk about the week in Iowa politics. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time.